Do I want to be my divine self? Do I want to be my divine self? That's a good question, because we don't know the answer. We don't know what our divine self is. Now, we think our divine self is something very good, something very wonderful, something very beautiful, something very uplifting, something very supportive, something very nice. We think our divine self is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. We use that word occasionally. But is it really? Is our divine self really something very special and very wonderful? The thing is, people often come to our seminar, and in coming to our seminar, they say to us that they would like to experience wholeness, that they would like to experience the perfection of their body. They'd like to experience their ideal self. And they say, oh, yes, that's what I want more than anything in the world. And I tell them, be careful. If you experience your ideal self, you will have nothing to complain about. You'll have no aches and pains. You'll have nobody in your world who is unhappy with you or you unhappy with them. The world will be in its prime condition, in its most wonderful condition. And you say, well, that sounds good. Well, really? We have to stop and think, what do we do most of the time in our life? And most of the time in our life, we complain. We talk about our problems. We talk about the problems of the world. We talk about the condition of the world. Now, when we are our ideal self, we will be saying at all times, the world is beautiful. Not because we want it to be beautiful, but because that's the way we are. We will see the world through our ideal eyes. And we will be unable to see anything but the ideal world. And all that we thought about before and all that we spent time on before and all that we spent our anxious moments on before is no longer there. We no longer are upset. We no longer are unhappy with the world. We are so pure, like a child, so innocent, so pure in ourself, that all we see is reality. All we see is the ideal, the divine. And the divine thing that we see is the divine oneness that exists. Now, if you say to me that you are one as all the universe, you know, I am the oneness of the universe. Well, in the oneness of the universe, you have the privilege of being the oneness of the universe in its ideal form, or the oneness of the universe in its human form, or in its relative form. Relative, perhaps, is a better word there, because the relative form means that it's yes or no, maybe or I wish. The relative form is not the ideal form. The ideal form says, this is what it is. And what it is ideal, it is perfect, it is without flaw. It cannot be any different than how it was ideally created. Now, let's just take a moment and think of the God of the Bible. The God of the Bible says, I created all things in 7 days, you know. Actually, 6 days. The seventh day, he rested. He wasn't doing any creating on the seventh day. So we really should only have a six-day week. But anyhow, we have 7 days. And he created everything in 7 days. Now, everything. Now, ask yourself, this divine essence, this divine beingness, truly which we are, but anyhow, this divine essence, did it make any mistakes? Did it make any mistakes that it had to think about before? Did it make a mistake by forgetting to create Eve at the same time it created Adam? You see, in the original Bible, there is no Adam and Eve. That is in the first chapter of the Bible. In the chapter of the creation, there's only God created man. Man and woman created he them. At the same moment. See, we get all confused. We start reading the second chapter and third chapter where I want you to write the story of your life. And so you sit down, you start writing the story of your life, and you start writing it from its purest form. And then you say, well, I want to tell about the adventures that I have. I want to tell about the problems that I have. That's the second chapter. That's what we start doing when we start filling in. If we could stay with the first chapter of the Bible, first chapter of our life, first chapter of everything, it would be pure. It'd be pure. You say to a child, "What do you be? What do you want to be when you grow up?" "I'll be daddy. I'll be mommy." But no, mommy and daddy have a lot to be improved, as far as we know. But they don't see that. They just see the ideal mommy and the ideal daddy, and that mommy and daddy are perfect in their eyes. In a child's eye, the mommy and daddy do no wrong. It's only later when people tell them that they don't have to do things that they have to do that they think, well, their mommy and daddy is causing them to behave where the other kids don't have to behave. Now, that's a relative state. But do most people, the children, do most children believe their mommy and daddy are God? You bet. They believe they are the allness. The world revolves around mommy and daddy. And this is beautiful. Now, do mommy and daddy make any mistakes? Not in the kids' eyes. As they might interpret it later on, yes, but not in the kids' eyes. Okay, now, as as God created the earth in the 6 days or 7 days, he created everything ideal. He created everything without flaw. There was no changes necessary. He didn't make a mistake. And he created all of the weather. He created the clouds. He created this. And when Adam and Eve lived in paradise, now this is before the apple thing, you know. When Adam and Eve lived in paradise, paradise? What does paradise mean?
Ideal.
The ideal. The ideal. And we get our thinking so far from that, that we start thinking that the serpent, which was just another man, the serpent in paradise was the evil thing. Well, it wasn't the serpent. According to the second chapter, not the first chapter. The first chapter, man knows everything just like God. I create them in my image, in my likeness, created them we. In other words, the principle of the law of cause and effect and God. So now, that's how he created it, and all perfect. And then the second chapter. Then we start getting into the idea that there's a devil. We start getting into the idea that man is going to eat this apple of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Oh, my goodness. When little children start having a relative world, the knowledge of good and evil. Is there any good and evil in the first chapter? No. It's all ideal. It's all perfect. It's without flaw. There's no good and evil. And there never is any good and evil. In the absolute, there's no... To do a naughty thing in the absolute is not naughty. It's just not beneficial. Mm-hmm. And it's who makes the law that says it's naughty, and makes the law that says it's right? Just us as we begin interpreting it. But in truth, all is ideal. Now, how do you and I start living in this ideal consciousness? Well, we've got to keep our thoughts pure and clear. Now, to live in that, how do I live in just my divine self? My goodness. When I live in my divine self, I don't know what a frown is. I don't know what a smile is. I don't know what any of these things are. I'm ideal. I live in a body that is created as an ideal essence. It's an ideal concept, pure in every way. And this will always be pure. It does not change from day to day being pure. It is always pure. And it's pure because that's its original creative cause. That's its divine purpose. That's its divine reality. And that's who you and I are. Now, you and me, do we want to be that way? Do we want to be that way? We say yes. We say, that would be fun. But are you willing to give up judgment? Are you willing to be non-judgmental, like it says up there, unpossessed, not one-pointed and untouched? Are you willing to do that? You see, and when you're willing to do that, and it's not a matter of being willing to do it, you wouldn't even think of it if you were living in your divine consciousness. A divine consciousness never looks at anybody else and says they're different from itself. A divine consciousness looks at everybody else in the world and sees them exactly like themselves because they are your reflection. And when your reflection is wholeness, purity, beauty, divine, the ideal, when your reflection is that, there's nothing to improve. There's nothing to change. There's nothing to be any different. Now, I say this to you because I know it's tough, but can you look at everything in the world, everybody in the world, can you look at everything, everybody, and say, you are beautiful? Can we look at the world? Now, I'm going to say something, but it's not true. Can we look at a crippled person and say, you're whole and perfect? No, we can't, because we cannot see that person crippled. That person is not crippled in our world. That person is whole and perfect in our world, and therefore we cannot say they're whole and perfect because we don't see them crippled. You don't say it's a whole perfect glass. Because this is a glass. It's an ideal glass, a perfect glass in every way. It does what I want it to do. Now, we don't see an imperfection. Whoops, there's a chip up there. What do we do with a chipped glass? Out. Out. You throw it out. What do you do with anything that's not perfect? You discard it. And this is what the divine does. The divine lives in ideal perfection, and it has no room in it for any imperfection. So if you are crippled, if you are imperfect, if you look at anyone in the world crippled or imperfect, then what you're doing is you're not being divine. And if you want to be divine, you have to see everything divine. Now, can you see everything divine? Can you see everybody divine? Can you see every circumstance in your life divine? Can you see that? And yes, you can. But the thing is, it takes training. And this is where we are in the seminars. We are in training ourselves to see all things from the divine. And when we can. We don't tell a child 2 times 2 is 6. We don't tell a child 2 times 5 is 3. We don't give a child the incorrect answer. Because if we give the child the incorrect answer, he's going to not be able to do mathematics. He won't have the foundation correct. But we teach ourselves that things are correct. We look at people who are imperfect in our eyes, and we say they are imperfect. Now, that means we, in our eyes, have the ability to see something imperfect. We are able to judge right and wrong, good, bad, perfect, imperfect. And as we make that judgment, we are compounding in us that lack of divinity. Because divinity cannot see imperfection. The ideal cannot know the unideal, because the moment the ideal would know the unideal, it's not ideal. And how does the ideal only know the ideal? It only looks at the ideal. It only sees reflected from itself the ideal. I don't see anything in you guys to change, and you don't see anything in me to change. I mean, I'm ideal, and you're ideal. And you say, I like that. I like that. I like that. That's nice. But, all right, do it. Do it. See me ideal. See yourselves ideal. See everybody in your world ideal. Now, are you the ideal mother? Are you the ideal wife? Are you the ideal woman in the world? Are you the ideal? No, you're not. You're the ideal human being or divine being. And divine being has no sex. It has no man, woman. It's just a being. This and you might use a snake as your body. You might use a bear, you know. You might use a child. You might use an adult. And at all times, you are the divine being. You are perfect as a divine being is perfect. Now, what robe, what role, what game are you going to play? Are you going to play the game of being a bear? You know, or dog, or stone. A stone is divine too, you know. They're all created out of the infinite. Now, are you the ideal stone? What's the ideal stone? Is that a mixture of gold and lead and minerals? What is the ideal? And it doesn't matter. Because this moment, I'm the ideal stone. Next moment, I'm the ideal bear. Next moment, I'm the ideal man. I'm all. Whatever I see, I am. That's why we say that the world is a reflection of who you are within yourself. So now, we train ourselves by playing this game to see all ideal. Now, what does an ideal bear do in your life? Does he hug you and crush you? Does an ideal bear act like a cuddly teddy bear with you? Does an ideal bear act like a threat to your life or a joy to your life or a joy to the world in every way? It's up to us how we create them. Now, Bengal tiger. Oh, they're terrible. They're in India. They are big. Oh, their heads are so big and they're so terrible. You know, the little Buddha had the Bengal tiger in there, and the boy wanted to say hello to the Bengal tiger in the zoo, that tiger, and his father said, no, no, no. And so his father put a deer in the way, and the Bengal tiger took it because it was for food. And the boy says, no, no. I want to come to terms with the tiger. I want to be his friend. I want to be with him. I want to do this. And he had no fear. And so what happens later in the story, he ends up shipwrecked with a Bengal tiger. And the Bengal tiger wants to chase him all over. And at first he's frightened of him because his father taught him fright. His father taught him fear. And then he read in the manual for being shipwrecked how to live with the Bengal tiger alone being shipwrecked. Of course, you know, I mean, everybody has that in their shipwreck manual. But he had it, and he's a good creator. And then he realized, be in charge, like Caesar would say, be the master. And so he looked at the Bengal tiger, and he didn't look at it, the Bengal tiger as something terrible. He just looked at the Bengal tiger as something that he had to be master of. No. And then he was master of it. And they both sat together, and the Bengal tiger put his head in the boy's lap. And they were one. Now, how did this happen? The boy had to train himself. He had to first train out of himself, if you will, the fear he had that his father put there, that a Bengal tiger is going to eat you up. And then after he did that, then he looked at the Bengal tiger as his friend. He said, we're in this together. We're in this together, and I love you. And he and the Bengal tiger became one. Now, you say, that's pretty terrific. Well, only the Buddha could do that. Only somebody who is, you know, destined to be the Buddha or understanding this. No, everybody does this. The Bengal tiger is any fear we might have, is any anticipation we have that there's something in the world that we did not create in purest love, in unconditional love. And all we do is begin to create everything in unconditional love. Now, I create Rosalie here in unconditional love. Rosalie has known me for 100,000 years, and she hasn't chosen to learn English so she could communicate well with me. And of course, I haven't learned to speak Switzerland either. But we do okay. But how do we communicate? We communicate as free spirits. She looks at me as a faultless being, and I look at her as a faultless being. I look at her as the most magnificent representation in the world of a mother. She is the ideal mother. And she overlooks her children's experiences. No, she doesn't. She doesn't see them. She only sees her children being beautiful and whole and perfect in every way. She only looks at them.